Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
What began as an eruption in one nation ended in the eradication of 600,000 species of animals and plants and 30% of Earth's population. Global suicide. What we gave you is the means to exterminate yourselves. And from the looks of you, you're gonna do it. You'll use competing ideas of liberty to bomb each other to rubble just like we did, and then your last day will look just like this.
Perhaps somewhere all your ends are written as indelibly as mine, but I choose to believe that your destinies are still your own. Maybe that's why I'm here, to remind you
of the power of possibility. Maybe that's the good in seeing my future, that I might remind you that right up until the very end, life is to be worn gloriously.
Because until our last moment,
the future is what we make it.
Okay, it's time to start this new episode of the podcast. It is, again, one of the non-dilly-dally weeks. If you're just tuning in, this is episode 131 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. What that means is that this is the episode in which we are discussing the series premiere of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
It's a whole new show.
If you are here to listen about our thoughts about the Star Trek Picard season two season finale.
You missed it.
Yeah, that's one episode behind this one. That is episode 130.
You went past that one. And you got to this one.
In the future,
you got to go back one.
Starting and picking and choosing. We're only mentioning this because of the peculiar release schedule of Paramount Plus, in which, at least in certain territories, they've released Strange New Worlds at the same time that they released Star Trek Picard.
What about those nations that don't have Paramount Plus? Aren't there European nations?
Well, that's part of the reason why we are doing these as separate episodes,
right?
Because some people will not be getting Strange New Worlds yet. Some of them aren't going to get Strange New Worlds potentially until June or something like that.
That's awful.
Well, you know, it depends also, because some of them might get it on Tubi or some, you know, Pluto TV or whatever. There might be some options
Tubi
out there.
Tubi and Pluto.
Hopefully, yes. Paramount Plus and CBS are doing the good work of getting the show out there to people. But in the meantime, Strange New Worlds, It's Got Star Trek, this is the podcast, new Star Trek.
I'm sorry, what?
It's a new Star Trek. It's great. We have
brand
new Star
fucking
Trek.
New, yes.
Yeah, yeah, it's new Star Trek.
There's like more Star Trek on now than ever or something.
Ever.
I mean, you could probably say that last year too, right?
Yeah, it was like that last year, but now it's even more.
Discovery,
even more. There's like a whole
Picard,
other show. There's,
Lower Decks.
There's two animated
Prodigy.
Shows. Yeah.
There's the business. The short treks.
There's that. Yeah.
Crazy amount of.
When are they coming out with more short treks?
They have no announcements. In fact, maybe they won't ever come out with more short treks. Although I think that would be a real disappointment because they do a lot of fun stuff with the short treks. I think, unfortunately, the studio probably is not interested in spending the money.
Like harumph. That's what they say. They say harumph.
I think they think they serve the purpose of getting people engaged with the new shows, offering a sort of a shorter version for people to sample and also for directors and writers to experiment around it and do some stuff. But that's what, for me, was the fun with the short treks, is they could experiment around a little.
You said experiment.
Yes, experiment. And they had two Strange New Worlds slash Pikerverse short treks. They had the one with Spock and number one trapped in a turbo lift.
Una, played by Rebecca Romijn.
And then they had who's married to Jerry O'Connell.
Who used to be married to John Stamos.
Used to be married to John Stamos. Yeah. Now she's married to to Jerry O'Connell, who follows us on Twitter for some reason.
He was in Sliders.
Well, he's in Lower Decks.
Wasn't he on Blossom? Was he on Blossom?
No, I don't think so.
No, that was
so.
The other guy. That was...
That was Joey Lawrence. And he wasn't on Hogan's Family. That was...
it's really insulting.
Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman, that's right.
Some of these even though I like them all, it's, I'm sure it would be insulting the Hogan to be confused for some of these people. Jerry O'Connell, who plays Commander Ransom, the first officer of the USS Cerritos on Lower Decks. So that is a Star Trek family.
Who did we compare him to?
To Joey Lawrence.
Oh,
he's
Joey Lawrence, right.
And Ozark.
Ozark.
Yeah,
Jason Bateman.
Anyways, I'm doing the same thing. I'm getting off topic.
Yes, again. We're getting off topic despite having a compressed schedule for this week due to doing two separate episodes to accommodate our multitude of diverse fans.
What do you think of the
not
theme
all of
music?
Whom who, you know, match together. All right, Jesse. We'll talk about the opening.
I like the theme music.
I like that.
It's pretty good.
I think it's cool.
It's fitting, very fitting sci-fi adventure.
I think it makes
we're the good guys. Da, 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 da.
I think it's well, it's this sort of
it does a little of the animated series style where they take the Star Trek theme but twist the arrangement.
That was interesting.
And the whole
I think it works.
The whole vibe of it is some kind of adventure marching through the mountains kind of deal.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
I think I liked it better than the Picard one.
Positive adventure. We're going on a positive adventure.
The Picard
not like an evil military.
Right.
Like that alternate TNG. Remember that alternate TNG
Galactic
theme?
Galactic Police.
Oh, yeah.
That just sounded like some sort of fascist nightmare. Look it up, folks. Look up the alternate, unused, original theme song to Star Trek The Next Generation. If you haven't heard it, it will blow your mind.
Your
warp core will breach.
Like, but with the Picard one... God.
There'll be a coolant leak.
Your warp core will breach.
The bulkhead will be slowly coming down. Geordi's going to have to roll under it, Indiana Jones style, but somehow more classily.
Yes. So... The Picard one, I've never had a strong opinion on either way. I think this
In terms of the theme.
And this one, the theme made me move my arms a little bit more and go like, yeah, we're going to do it.
How much of that is the theme and how much of that is the, in my view, pretty brilliant choice of visual imagery?
I guess when I think of the opening, I think of the theme mixed with the whole thing together.
What is something that jumps out at you about their choices in the sort of scenes they depict the USS Enterprise,
you know,
no bloody A, B, or C, or D, flying through space. Mm. There is something I would argue, I think a lot of other people would too. Is not
Am I the only one that likes the theme here?
No, I like the theme. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the visual imagery that goes along with the theme, which I think the synergy is really good because the music, I agree with you, adventure.
Well, I think
the
whole episode had a vibe of like the original TOS, and it also kind of had this theatrical feel to it as well. I don't know if that's what you're getting at, but that's
talking about the opening because it shows the Enterprise going through different zones, and I think you can make an argument that each of those places it goes through, at least the majority of them, are mimicking, evoking scenes from almost every other Star Trek.
I'd have to watch it again.
So you have
I didn't
a scene,
even think about it.
You have, for example, you have a scene where the Enterprise is flying up over and there's like some icy rocks floating around. Looks almost identical to the
that's
Voyager.
That's a hot scene.
It's the Voyager.
A hot scene in Star Wars.
Star what?
In Voyager, when Voyager's flying through a sort of comedy icy thing.
Comedy?
You meant Enterprise.
As in like comet, not like the funny ha-ha comedy.
Well,
no, like
bit
an
of
adverb.
Both.
Comedy.
A bit of both.
Not an adverb.
Not comedy.
Comedy.
You know, I thought...
Comedy.
I actually thought the Voyager intro is pretty cool. I like
it
the
is.
Music. And
look, the point, I'm trying to explain all these things. There's a Voyager one. There's a Deep Space Nine one. It's not Deep Space Nine, but it is the ship flying near a big space station.
I'm not like the biggest Voyager fan, but I think the opening is pretty cool.
There is...
some episodes
there is
are
a
good.
Shot of
there's
the Enterprise.
There's a lot of great
there's a
episodes.
Shot of the Enterprise in the Strange New Worlds opening. There's a shot of the Enterprise hoving into view, like from below, almost exactly like from the TV show Enterprise, not from its opening, but from like in A Mirror Darkly and a couple of the episodes where you see that sort of three quarters angle and you see the top of the ship and it's flying up at you and then it starts coming up until you see the front of the ship. That straight out of Enterprise. Right. Mm. You have what else is there? There's stuff that comes kind of out of the Star Trek movies where you see certain angles that look very similar to Star Trek One, like when the Enterprise is leaving space dock. And then in the episode, they also have an imagery that mimics Kirk arriving to, yeah.
Particularly made me think of it, had a theatric feel is when they were approaching that space dock and like looking at the Enterprise.
It's kind of like a combination of Star Trek, the motion picture and 2001, A Space Odyssey. Cause there was some sort of psychedelic, the lights were all like multi-infinity mirroring. Anyway, I guess the main point I was making is that the opening scene, I think you can pick pieces, like each of those scenes that are shown throughout where the Enterprise is flying around mimic things. Oh, there's even Discovery in the sense that you see like the ship all like tiny and far away, like but you just see the top side view, like going through a cloud. That's similar to the Discovery opening and some shots in Discovery. So I think that in this opening, they're making a conscious attempt to evoke a connection to pretty much every other Star Trek series, which I think is cool and creative and clever and subtle, but not so subtle that, you know, internet sleuths couldn't catch it.
I did like some episodes. There were some really good episodes of Voyager.
You're still stuck on the whole Voyager thing.
There were.
I like Voyager quite a bit. I am sometimes disappointed in Voyager. Yeah. You know? It's like when you have a sibling, maybe, where you're just like, Why don't you just get your shit together? You got some good stuff. You got some good stuff in there. You got some good stuff going on.
You're full of good meat and juice.
You know, it's great when you show up at parties until it gets late.
Yeah, it's time to go.
All right. So opening theme is good. Opening visuals are pretty cool.
I did not catch that about the
well, check it out. Trip,
but I believe you.
Check it out and see. I want you to.
Isn't that what kind of happened in the dot?
Well, that they went through, but that was focused on TOS.
That was dot and what?
That was dot and Matrix. Ephraim, it was dot and Ephraim, Matrix.
No, not that one. Dot,
Ephraim and dot.
It was like Ephraim? That was like the Enterprise.
Yes, and it was focusing on the life of the original Enterprise.
All right.
Kirk's portion of it.
Okay, so it was Una giving them opening monologue. The closed captioning where it's calling so there was Una talking, but then there were.
So you watched with closed captioning
on the second time.
On the second time, of course.
And there was another dude talking in the opening. It was going back and forth between Una and somewhere else. And in the closed captioning, they referred to that character as Terminal Jockey. It was a Terminal Jockey.
What was he referring to? One of the people,
I guess,
in the space command
that was
of,
his occupation.
Of the Kylie race, Kylie planet, Kylie people. Are the Kylesians?
Kylie 279 or something.
The name of the planet.
The forehead people.
Yeah, but what would you call the race of people? Are they the Kylesians?
I call them forehead people.
Kylesians?
He calls them forehead. Jesse calls them.
I call them backwards ass idiots.
Jeez. The Kylites?
Jesse needs to watch the show again. It's like, hey, fuck these people.
So I don't know. I'd never heard the term terminal jockey before. Yeah.
It's like, you know, that's what they do.
Probably a terminal
jockey.
They
sit at at a terminal, console jockey.
You type in commands and controls.
Counter jockey. Yeah,
commands and controls and shifts.
Command and controls and shit.
When they turned into the Kylians or the Kylites or whatever, and
Kyrulians
and the Soong, the Noonien Soong, Noonien Soong, Noonien Sing,
Laan Noonien
Sing, Noonien Sing. She didn't take the painkillers because I think they're implying that she has some kind of like substance abuse problem, like probably in part brought on or exacerbated by her traumatic past.
I think she's really tough,
or because she's associated somehow with Khan Noonien Sing and she's genetically engineered worried
a descendant or
about the impact, the effect ancestor of the sedative on her genetics or something. I don't know.
Yeah, what is she worried about? What are you even worried about?
All
what
right.
Are worried about? Yeah.
But
Starfleet.
But
what
I was
worried about?
But I was going to say is that but did you notice that she changed like right away when they plugged her full of shit? Yeah. Well, she changed right away
because they had to get to the commercial break.
But Pike got it beforehand and he didn't change. Yeah. It's like the sedative delayed.
He was holding it in like a fart.
Like a fart.
Well, she's a genetically modified human, right?
So,
well, the assumption is that.
Yeah.
My assumption
is that they took the sedative so it staved off the transformation, but she didn't take the sedative, so she had to feel it like right away.
Yeah, and also she refers to in her background story later in the episode. And I know,
which is silly.
I know we're jumping around all over here, but we're just excited. It's that's new how Star
this,
Trek.
That's how this show works.
We haven't even gotten to the part where we talk about how fucking sexy Anson Mount is, which is old news.
We haven't gotten into that at all this
but
episode.
It's worth repeating. But we'll get into that.
Is that new history?
Right now we're talking about La'an Noonien Singh. And I so far have really enjoyed the character. I didn't know what to make of this character. You know, we don't know most of these people. So when the previews were going on, I was like, all right, that'll be interesting. We'll see what their deal is. I was captivated this episode with the storyline. And I took special note. I think she was distracting us a little bit, or the writers were distracting us a little bit when she's talking about her family being like just gutted and disemboweled and
by
all
the
this
gorn.
Yeah, used dark as like, shit, like hatchling sex and stuff.
And they were talking about reproduction sex. Yeah. And, like, it was really dark.
So I think
and
that
it's
was
the gorn, and they would have moved all slowly. They
yeah.
Cut
right.
them up all super slow.
I think like, that was meant to distract us from a comment she made, which was referring to she and her family being on a quote unquote colony ship that was captured by the Gorn.
I think
we don't have the full story, yeah, and no. I'm basing that entirely off of partly the fact that she seems like a person with a past, perhaps even more complicated than
person
what
with
she's
past,
already described,
perhaps,
and also her last name being Noonien Singh, right?
And,
so,
and this is prior to the space seat.
It's
episode.
Prior to space
prior
seat
to
episode.
The past.
Post the eugenic wars.
Post
the eugenic wars. And if we are to believe that they Paramount, you know, will continue to MCU this Star Trek business in terms of having overlapping connections and stuff.
What does the internet feel about that?
Clearly,
Who gives a fuck what the internet is? Except for us, because we're on the internet.
Fuck
yeah.
But I think there's a couple things
Wait
going
a minute,
on
we're
here.
We're on the internet?
They have the...
Yeah, we finally made it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, you guys didn't hear about that? They have La'an Noonien Singh, who survived a Gorn horror after
her
being captured after
John
her after her quote unquote colony ship or possibly cryostasis ship, who knows, was captured. All right. So those are all references and connections to Khan, to the eugenic wars and the eugenic, you know, the genetically engineered quote-unquote super people. In Picard,
we are super
minor spoiler
people.
For season two of Picard, but Adam Soong, the ancestor of...
I don't recall that we discussed
the Enterprise guy's name was fucking like, I don't know, wasn't Arik? No, that was the Picard one. I don't know.
Balando.
Anyway.
Balando Soong.
Balando Soong.
He was doing some stuff on Enterprise with eugenics people, and Adam Soong in the 24th century is already doing, like, pulling out a Project Khan file. So I think, Pike mentions that there was the Second American Civil War, which was then kind of morphed into the Eugenics War, which then morphed into World War III. Now, that would be a retcon from the idea, the previously stated idea that the Eugenics Wars happened in like the 1990s, which is what I think they state in Space Seed.
Right.
So I think what they're doing is they're moving the Eugenics Wars into the 21st century just a little bit, sort of a little forward in our contemporaneous 2022
time. Maybe their records were bad.
Exactly. Who cares? You can retcon these things if it makes sense. But I think they're shifting it around to have Adam Soong on Picard, he gets involved in this stuff, or maybe even gets it going and gets involved in the eugenics wars. And so I think the eugenics wars are going to be at least some little background stuff that they're going to play around with in Strange New Worlds. They've already done it in other shows. So let's keep an eye on that.
You've got a lot of complicated thoughts on that.
Do you have
big feelings that go along with it as well?
I have
moderately sized.
I have moderately sized feelings, sort of, you know, well mediated, well tempered, I should say, feelings. Mm-hmm. It's just a vibe. It's not even really. It's barely a prediction, and I don't think it's much of a prediction to say at the very least. La'an Noonien Singh has something to do with something, and we'll learn more about her over time.
I like they were subtle with the pad, because our first introduction to Soong is really Pike is reading that pad on the Stamets, the shuttle named Stamets. Did you notice that shuttle was
and
named Stamets?
Noonien Singh.
What did I say?
Soong.
Oh, sorry.
Which is understandable because we've been talking about Soong's a lot.
And then maybe that connects the how their names are kind of similar, and that I always got them confused in my brain, and you know, you maybe
think they're going to retcon that.
There's this Dr. Soong started Khan Noonien Singh.
Ideally, they would have a new Star Trek spinoff that's just called Star Trek Spiner. it's just Brent Spiner playing various
He plays
versions.
Every part on the show.
Yeah. So he's reading
Jeffrey Combs is nowhere to be seen.
So Pike is reading that he's reading that pad that's talking about Noonien Singh. Laan Noonien Singh.
It's like one of them mid-name apostrophes.
Yeah.
So great name for a black metal band. Mid-name apostrophe.
Just saying Leanne with a British accent.
So but it didn't show like the pad in full. You kind of caught a glimpse and said something about a Gorn, and it was easy to miss the Noonien Singh at the top. I actually paused it and looked at it, and I was like, because the first time I didn't really see what it was saying across the top, but mm-hmm. it was her profile. I said Noonien Singh and said Gorn, and it's all like, Gorn, why are they talking about the Gorn? What did she discover the Gorn or something? What's going on here? But that was just that was sort of lore.
It's much worse.
It was lore, but yeah. they weren't shoving it at you. They weren't making it was okay for you to miss that point. And point being is I like when they don't just feel like they have to throw everything in your face.
Yes.
Like it was really subtle. It was kind of pretty subtle, you know, and it just gave you some visual clues that something's going on. If you happen to catch it, if you didn't, no big deal. But
I think that this episode is, we won't beat around the bush. I won't beat around the bush. For me, the most entertaining episode of Star Trek I've seen since Lower Decks, at least.
Yeah, it was fun.
Possibly a few episodes because I really like Prodigy as well, but Prodigy took a little while for it to build up for me.
It's dark, right? Talking about Pike's injury and stuff, but it's that kind of darkness that's not overly. It's fucked
it's
up.
It's balanced.
It's balanced, but it still feels like it feels. It still feels actiony. Yeah. It still feels. It's got a good pace to it. There's fun to it, even though there's also darkness, but the darkness doesn't weigh it down to make you just bummed out all the time.
Yes,
you know,
it's I agree. It's
fun.
And you know, just people always complain about the producers and the writers, the people who like Akiva Goldsman, who I think there are plenty of reasons to critique much of his prior work, but not all of it by any means. But this episode demonstrates he wrote the teleplay. He directed it. I thought he did a great job. Not 100% perfect job. There are a couple things to quibble with here and there, particularly I think in the direction. But the teleplay, the script, I thought was really tight. Again, with that balance of humor and drama and sci-fi and overt moralizing, which no doubt people are complaining about, but that is sort of old school Star Trek. It's just have the captain give a little speech that states very clearly the point of the episode.
Yeah, I really liked when Pike at the end was talking about, we gave you means to exterminate yourself. Looks like you're going to do it. You'll use competing ideas of liberty to bomb each other to rubble, just like we did. I like that idea, like bringing to surface the competing ideas of liberty, you know, like that was a good line. And that was a
very good line.
Yeah, that was a solid Star Trek, you know. Like referring to like what Star Trek, you know, originally did, which you were just saying right now is yes, they do. It is about current events. Like I was talking to someone who grew up around that time era period and he didn't watch Star Trek a lot, but
which time period? You mean the late 60s?
The TOS time period.
Okay.
I
was like, what, you mean the 23rd century?
Yeah, the 23rd century.
We're talking to some motherfucker from the 23rd century.
You didn't tell us this? But he only watched Star Trek in passing and he was like, oh, Star Trek, didn't they have a lot of like, you know, social issues and stuff like that? So that was someone who grew up back then who didn't watch a lot of Star Trek. He was like, it was known for having social issues. So,
all right.
And it didn't weigh it down too much. I thought it was good. Akiva did I Am Legend and Hancock both, which had Will Smith.
Yes.
So he also did Da Vinci Code. Cinderella Man wasn't bad. I don't know.
No, people love to complain. And again, most of these
Constantine, which was a weird,
most of these people,
Keanu Reeves,
it's okay to criticize. Nobody has a problem with criticizing, but there's ways to do it that are polite and constructive. And then there's the whole like, this guy is terrible. He sucks at everything. I'm not going to say he doesn't suck at some things. I'm no defender of Akiva Goldsman in particular. I'm very impressed with this episode, how it came together, the thought that was put into it. And when you listen to his background and when he came on board Discovery, because he wasn't on it right at the beginning, he was brought on board to help out. And he had simply assumed it was a Pike show. until he got to the job. Like when they called him up and said, hey, do you want to work on Star Trek Discovery? He had just assumed, oh, of course they're doing a Pike show because that's what makes sense. It's a prequel to TOS. Mm-hmm. They got to do a Pike show. So he's had this roiling around in his head for a while. And we'll see if they can keep it up. But I am very heartened for a number of reasons by this premiere episode, and we will discuss some of those reasons when we get back
after the break.
After the break.
Is that what the dice?
Oh no, the dice were last episode. Oh, we're on to a whole new thing.
Okay. I got one over here. Up. Let me. I got a two, so I think we're going to a break.
Okay.
All right. Good. That was Where's Captain Kirk from Spiz Energy, 1979.
Apparently they had a song later on called Spock's Missing.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
There was some extra thing going on.
And one called 5-Year Mission.
Oh, yeah. They got some sort of outro going.
Ah, that was a real break right there.
That was a real break.
We're a real show.
Radio break.
We're a radio show.
Radio break. Okay, so first thing to talk about back from break is that Anson Mount and the character of Captain Pike are both very, very sexy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're very cute.
I posit that.
Did you like that when he had a big beard?
I did like when he had a big beard. I liked when he had a big horse. I liked when he had a big house.
Apparently he had a bigger stick, too.
I liked that he had a lovely companion sleeping in bed, and he was making...
Some other captain.
He was making some pancakes for her. This ingratiated me into the world of Captain Pike.
When Pike was talking to the governing leader people, he was like,
"I'm the governing leader."
He was talking about the elephant's fight in the grass that suffers.
And that's classic. Kenyan proverb.
She was like, "You're giving me a proverb, which is less useful than a big stick," which is ironic because she's using some kind of Theo Roosevelt kind of reference, which is weird.
Well, she's back.
You know, I hadn't clocked onto that, and that's a good point.
And then she was like, whoever has the bigger stick wins. And then Pike was all like talking about how he had the biggest stick.
He did, man.
Yeah. And then I didn't realize till the second watching, it was like, biggest stick.
I have the biggest dick.
Yes.
I mean, that had to have gone through somebody's mind when they said that. I was thought of that because you were talking about how Anson Mount had a big beard and he had a big this and all these things.
Do you know that Anson Mount's brother? Do you know what Anson Mount's brother is? Brother's name is?
Mornin'
Mount. No, his brother's name is Anson. He has an older... His father's name is Anson, and he has an older brother from his father's first marriage who's named Anson, and then he's from his father's second marriage,
like,
and he's named
names
Anson. Yeah, I think they have
Did they do it that
names.
Way on purpose?
It's like the Bach family.
Well, presumably there was some level of agency, I'm guessing, from Anson Mount's father, Anson the second or third or whatever the hell he is. That's a little fun fact about Anson Mount.
He's from Tennessee or something.
The sexiest captain... In all four quadrants of the galaxy.
In the show, he was in Montana.
Yeah, well, and Captain Pike is from California, I believe.
Did you say believe it or not? Is that what you said?
No, I said I believe.
Oh.
Because he was talking about Mojave.
They're
just like hanging out there.
You ever think those wind turbines, those are scary. Aren't those scary?
Only if the blade
if you're a
falls
bird,
off.
Yeah, the blade comes at you. Or what if you were tied to the edge of the blade and it was like spinning around? And you're
think
like,
that
oh.
would, I think that would be problematic for the blade.
The shuttles, I like that the shuttle looked all, when was it Admiral Bob? I think that was his name.
Admiral Bob.
No, Admiral April.
No, it was Admiral Bob. His name was Bob.
He Admiral called him, Steve.
Yeah, Robert April.
But
he was the previous captain and the first captain of the Enterprise.
The Pike called him Bob. So
his name is Bobber.
Is Robert Paulson. His name is Robert Paulson.
His name is Robert Paulson. April.
I know, I'm saying. So Admiral Bob
and
is
Bob
correct.
Is short.
Yeah. And I was saying Admiral Bob, and you were like, no, it's not that. It's not Admiral Bob, it's something else. You don't know. You don't even know.
Okay. If you want to indulge the the racist, the unfortunate racist contingent of most of them are racist, maybe not all of them, but Robert April has been mentioned a few times, and there's written in some things on screen and stuff like that, but the only real on-screen appearance of Captain Robert April is in Star Trek the Animated Series. In an episode we have not covered yet. Oh. I know we've covered much of the first season, but we have yet to cover that particular episode. In that episode, Robert April is portrayed as being a nominally white person. Hmm. Granted, it's TAS, so he's actually some form of horrifying pink, but he's coded as being white on the animated series. This is his one on-screen appearance, is this brief appearance.
And so people are pointing it out.
So, producers of Star Trek Strange New Worlds opted to cast somebody who did not entirely match the physical description from the animated series. They instead hired just a very talented actor to play this role. And this has some people on the internet shitting their fucking pants, shitting their brains out, their eyes out,
pooping their brains out.
Is coming out and it's freaking them out.
their brains out. Are falling out of their forehead poles.
It is fascinating. I only mention it because it is fascinating. It you would know, be amusing were it not the were the implication not that some people are not great people.
This may be a different generation, and I don't know if this means anything, but I remember the original Smithers on Simpsons was actually
African-American. Black guy.
And nobody commented when he turned full-on yellow.
Yeah.
So, Simpsons yellow. So, but it's like, people just didn't mention that.
Homer used to sound all like, boo, 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 boo.
That's true. You make an excellent point.
things change, Mox.
It's kind of sad that, like, you make a change. Something happens to be different in a very specific way, and everyone loses their mind for no reason. And
did
it's
you say
like
a Pacific.
Like way? I didn't. I did not say that. What? I could say that to you. Did you just say fart juice? Did you just say fart juice? You've
totally affronted Dan. Jesse has affronted Dan. Dan has been affronted.
Because people do this in comic books and all sorts of
there
shit.
There is a segment of...
It's not just Star Trek. Yeah,
there's a no, it isn't. But there is a segment of the Star Trek fandom, as with other fandoms as well. But I think sometimes people find it a little bit more perplexing in the Star Trek fandom to have people...
oh yes, of course.
Whose views don't seem to match up well with the ethos of Star Trek.
Right.
But
you could see it more being a Star Wars thing.
No offense to our Star Trek, Star Wars.
No,
bros.
I'm just playing.
It seems a little bit incompatible, right?
Yeah.
But I think you could, you know, I've heard people argue. They're like, yeah, but you know, it's like everything's perspective, and some people their view might come completely out of the blue. It seem incompatible, but from their perspective, it's entirely compatible.
Yeah,
which is fascinating, and that gets a little bit into the message of this episode, as you already referenced, Dan, with the brilliant little Pike speech at the end, and sort of the general concept of warring factions and people fighting each other and the inevitable problems that could have. You know, he makes the point. He says, no, it's debate, you know, debate and discussion. Mm. That's how, you know, negotiation. That's how you're supposed to try to solve these things.
It's not called negotiation.
Yes.
It's called negotiation.
Yes. Although in the end, in typical Star Trek fashion, the moral isn't 100% neat and tidy, because he gives this brilliant speech about how you should give speeches and talk to each other and negotiate. And then the leader lady is all like,
well, there's two leaders. There's one, there's the leader lady
like
person.
A baldy dude.
I know, but I'm just, when he's just talking to
there's
her
a dude in
and
the...
she's all like, she says the line about the stick and I'm trying to complete my point here, which is,
oh, really? Are you trying to complete your point? Yeah. Is that difficult right now?
No, not at all.
Do you want me to make it difficult for you? Cause I can, if you want,
I'm going to persist. Like my hero, Elizabeth Warren. I'm going to persist.
Okay. Real.
That's good advice. He suggests conversation, discussion, negotiation. But in the end, he uses the big stick to be like, okay, if that's not going to work, then we're aliens and we're just going to tell you, like, we're going to scare you.
See, what you should say is it's negotiation. It's not nestopation. Nego.
Yeah. Okay. I got it.
That's what you should have said before.
Yeah.
I didn't, though.
Yeah, but that's what you should have said.
Yeah, should have, would have, could have.
So,
lost your chance.
So, he brought them into the Federation, which, yeah, he kind of threw out the whole numero uno rule. What is it called?
The Prime exactly. Directive, General Order Number
General
One.
General Order Number One.
Which is the Prime Directive.
That's what they renamed
it.
They used to call it
that. And so General Order One.
It's funny they call it General Order Number One, given that on Enterprise, there's that episode where where Archer's all like, maybe someday we'll have some sort of, you know, directive.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that.
That's more important than anything else in the world.
So, yeah, so he forcefully brought them into the Federation, breaking the General Order Number One, and he also got in trouble with Starfleet a bit over it, although Admiral Bob was able to pull some strings.
Yeah, it was a classic dilemma.
Because he's Captain Pike, man.
It's a classic
but that
dilemma.
But like Patrick was saying, like, Captain Pike
gets away with
it. He kind of forced them into the...
Yeah, he was a little swashbuckly, which is, again, very old school, very TOS, very appropriate for this era of Star Trek politically, even whether you do agree with it or disagree with it. The 23rd century Federation and Starfleet are modeled very closely off of sort of 1950s and 60s U.S. U.S. policy.
They're getting
US
away
positions,
with shit.
You know?
Well, the original reason
soft colonization, quote unquote.
The original reason I brought up Admiral Bob was because I liked how the ship looked all worn in when it landed. Like, I liked how the ship blended with.
Agreed.
I felt like this is planet Earth, and we're looking at something that's sitting on Earth.
It's Montana.
It didn't look like some kind of weird, like, sterilized thing. And in space, it can just kind of look like that.
No one can hear you clean.
Yeah, exactly. That's
didn't look
true.
Like that
I didn't
stupid,
yeah, like when you're scrubbing down the
stupid
shuttle.
Vulcan planet with nothing on it.
Yeah.
Bunch
so
see
rocks and shit.
Jess is an example of those types of people who are inexplicably fans of Star Trek.
So, but it made me
pointy-eared bastards.
No, I didn't say pointy-eared bastards. So I said they had a planet with nothing on it.
It made me think of the episode of Discovery when Tilly and crew landed on that ice planet with the giant ice monster. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a good look at that ship, and the ship was covered in ice. We didn't get a good, like, it was a cool, shot and a cool moment in the show, but I felt this one really captured the feeling of looking kind of, it was good effects.
The everyday vibe of a landing shuttlecraft.
Yeah.
It was shuttlecraft landing in the Montana wilderness.
It was neat with a K. Neat.
Well, and one thing I liked about what they sprinkled throughout this episode are these little, hints at progress, and one of those is the Montana landscape with those giant windmills, right?
Yeah.
The sort of showing that at this
wind
stage,
turbines, they don't have
the wind turbines. Yes, that is a more appropriate term.
Windmill. What is this? Some cottage out?
I think it's not
Switzerland.
Hey, I would argue they're milling electricity. That's what they're doing. They're milling electrons.
The Netherlands has windmills.
They're milling electrons into electricity.
What if there's a person named Millie who just like dances around there, and there's just Millie going
Millie electrons.
She's milling again. A million electrons.
But the idea being
a million electrons.
I think it's cute and clever that they are presenting the future. They're showing us subtle little things that are normal in the future, that are meant to be, that you don't even pay attention to. Attention is not drawn to them. None of the characters draw attention to them. None of the characters think it's weird because to them it's normal. One of those things is giant wind turbines in Montana, in what clearly is again, coded as being this turbine? Is the wilderness. This is Pike getting out into the middle of nowhere and escaping.
It's still the wilderness.
But it's got wind turbines. And it's like it's normalizing that idea that that's acceptable. In order to have that wilderness, you need to have those wind turbines. That's the cost. You don't get the pristine view of the mountains, but the mountains aren't melted. They're not at the bottom of the sea because of global warming or whatever. All right. Another subtle example is just some background chatter when they're introducing Nurse Chapel, and Dr. Mbenge talks about how she's on loan from the Stanford Morehouse Epigenetics Project or something to that effect. And they are making sure that Stanford and Morehouse College, which is a historically black university in Atlanta, Georgia, they're putting them on equal footing. In 23rd century, Morehouse is on equal footing with Stanford. Yeah, maybe they merged, maybe they're partnering, but they are on equal footing. Yeah. And it's I like those things that are put in there to show the changes.
Stanford's the Harvard of the West.
Most people would qualify these as positive changes in the future, and just subtly sprinkle them out. There are a few other examples that I'm not thinking about at the moment, but this show, at least in this episode, one of the things that impressed me about the writing was that sprinkling things like that along in there to give you some world building and some world building that makes you feel like, ooh, the future's kind of cool. They're trying to get their shit together.
It makes things feel more robust.
Yeah.
It's robust.
It's robust.
It's a robust future we have to look forward to.
Yeah, full of details that aren't thrown in our face necessarily, but exist on their own. Yeah. Just to help you feel like you're more a part of it.
Yeah, I agree. Just like the Gorn on the pad.
It's like the Gorn business. On the pad.
Just like the Gorn on the pad. You Gorn put your on Gorn the pad. On your pad.
You put your Gorn on the pad. Gorn pone. You put the Gorn pone. Gorn
pone. That makes me uncomfortable.
Tag bag.
Back tack.
Tag bag.
Tag bag.
Tag ball.
All right.
Wait, there was tack bag. There was
back tack.
Tack tack bag.
Tackle.
Tag ball. Tag ball. It was the Cone Rockets versus the Boom Shield.
But was that what it is? Yeah.
I think I want to be on the Cone Rockets. Do you want to be on the Cone Rockets or the Boom Shield?
I was just laughing at the dude's like, we're going to go check out the back tack. And by the way, good opportunity to talk about this iteration of Uhura. This iteration of Uhura, particularly the interaction with Nurse Chapel, I thought was really fun. I thought the interaction with the alien fellow was great. Just that line when she's like, hi. And then he like does that kind of like comical steps back, jumps backwards. It's in the turbo lift when the alien fellow is trying to escape.
Oh, right. When the alien fellow, when it's, they're talking about Delta Sky Pi or what were they saying?
Yes. Yeah. They were talking about
Delta Scorpi 7.
Yes. Which is one of those inside jokes that maybe we'll learn about one day. You know, it's that classic thing that I think you see more and more on TV shows where they have an in joke that's not revealed to the audience, but the audience has enough information to sort of suss out what it's meant to represent.
Someone can leak it on the internet too if they want.
Leak it.
And Mbenge said something about, he said, never get the house dressing.
Good advice.
Well, usually the house dressing is just some kind of vinaigrette. It's not a big deal. I would say the more important rule to follow is don't get the fish on Sundays. Because not that it's going to make you sick.
It's just old fish.
It just won't taste as good. Oh, I see. Because it's like the delivery. Because
you didn't get a delivery on
You didn't
Sunday.
Get a delivery. Your delivery comes on Monday or Tuesday, probably. Mm. So I would say I'd be more concerned, not for sickness, but for like taste.
Just for freshness.
Yeah. And you got to be real careful with the soup of the day, because that's generally leftovers. But depending on the day, that's pretty good. Like we had this lobster bisque, this place I worked at. That was really fucking good. But house dressing is usually just some kind of balsamic vinaigrette or some kind of basil vinaigrette. It's nothing exciting usually. It's not exciting, but it's something that people get.
Was there anything exciting about this episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds?
The eye brush thing. What was that eye brush thing they did?
I don't know, and I felt really bad that I didn't know, and I'm feeling like I'm missing out, but I hope we'll learn more about that.
Maybe we just gotta look it up. Spock, I like when Spock was like, pretty weird. He seemed mad.
Yeah,
it was pretty weird. He's like, "What the fuck, man?"
The Spock is still getting used to these other people's expressions is primarily human people.
Because this warp signature's also got a pretty weird signal variance. Like, pretty weird. What the fuck, man?
Pretty weird.
What kind of description is that? Speaking of zoomy shots, there was the zoomy shot into the... This ain't your Star Trek TNG engineering room, man. That is a big old engineering room. Mm. When it zoomed down the warp... warp drive or whatever. Well, is it the warp drive?
In TOS, you would see those dudes like climbing up and down ladders and stuff.
Right.
Down in engineering.
Like. Right. Yeah. And so there was some sense of multi-floored thing, but this one went like way many floors up, and it showed the background was a giant fucking car. This is like a warehouse size space behind him.
Right. Yeah.
This is, but in TNG, it was smaller. Is that what it called? The warp engine? Warp drive? Is it the warp drive? Is it the engine? Is it the
warp drive?
Not the nacelle. The nacelle's
the main thing you don't want to happen is you don't want to
get the reaction chamber.
You don't want to get a coolant leak.
Right. Yeah. Your shit
coolant leak. That's a big problem.
Then you got to dam the ramparts.
It drips all over the
warp core breach could be imminent.
When they on the closed captioning said "damn the ramparts," they said "damn." I don't think that's what "damn the ramparts" is, because that would see like "god damn the ramparts." No, what they mean is they dam them up so they won't fall over, right? Isn't that just spelled "dam"?
I am insufficiently acquainted with that particular phrase.
I don't think that is even a phrase.
To know the correct, I've never heard that phrase.
But haven't they ever? Haven't people
I don't
said
think
damn
Captain
thing?
Pike is going to make up some bullshit phrase, though. Yeah. I trust Captain Pike at the very least not to make up some bullshit. He's a very honest man. Hmm. He's clearly very honest.
So we were led to believe.
Well, so damn the torpedoes. It does mean damn the torpedoes. So it is D-A-M-N, because maybe it was a play on damn the tornadoes, which is torpedoes, which is D-A-M-N. But isn't there a word that's just damn meaning something else? No? Is there no word D-A-M? Well,
damn is in like, you know, damnation or whatever.
Damn.
You're cursing.
Okay,
somehow.
So damn D-A-M is a barrier constructed to hold back water and raise its level,
right,
forming a reservoir used to
that's
generate electricity.
Yes.
Damn the reservoir. Damn the ramparts.
Hey, everyone in the audience, did you get that?
Yes, we know what damn means.
Did you get that?
Well, maybe there's a verb, a version of it. The verb means to build a dam. Okay,
but that's still spelled like dam.
That's spelled D-A-M.
It's not spelled
damn,
like
damn,
and
damn.
It's not spelled with the N.
But damn the torpedoes is spelled with an N, M-N. So maybe it's a play on damn. Okay, we've gone too far, and I've proven that I just wasted
lost,
all of our
you
time.
You lost me, Dan.
Right,
here's what we're gonna do.
Dan Glaubitz.
We're gonna take
damn
a break.
Damn Glaubitz.
We're gonna
damn
take a break.
Dan Glaubitz.
We're gonna take a break.
Damn the Glaubitz.
Damn Glaubitz.
We're gonna take a break, and we're gonna sort all this out offline.
We're gonna try.
Then we're gonna come back. And
we will come back.
Wrap things up. Be right back.
Dan has dissented.
Okay, we have returned from our break. Dan was holding his breath the whole time.
Oh,
like
man.
10 minutes.
Yeah, it was fucked up.
He turned purple.
So
he was like purple Herman.
I was purple Urple. That was purple Urple. So we know that Klingon moon of Boreth. Do we know anything about that? I don't know. Do we just know that?
Yeah, that's from Discovery.
Yeah, so Klingon moon of Boreth.
Season 2 of Discovery.
Kylie 279. We know about that. Oh yeah, the ship that they saw was the Archer. That was the Archer.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, oh, Archer. And
that Archer guy.
And did you catch the other little tidbit? Discovery tidbit. Early on,
I mentioned it already. Stamets, the shuttle Stamets. You were listening.
Yeah,
I thought I heard somebody
say Stamets.
I was totally
Stamets
thinking up some clever
that,
joke.
I said that on the part where they were talking about reading about Noonien Singh and the Gorn pad and how they were sitting on
previously
the
on
Stamets.
This episode of the podcast.
They were sitting on the Stamets while they read that.
Yeah.
While Pike read that.
Yes. All right. Stamets, Archer. Can we hope for a Malcolm Reed, like the USS Malcolm Reed?
It'll be some kind of like super battleship.
Yeah.
That does awesome
but
things.
But like a compact sized one.
It'll be like a destroyer.
Yeah.
With like all sorts of red alerts and things. Didn't he invent the red alert?
He invented the red alert, and I think he liked pineapple cake.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say he invented the red alert and he liked it.
Well, I'm sure he liked it as well.
He liked to call red alert. He invented red alert. What is that?
I don't know.
I think he did. I think Dan's right. I think Malcolm Reed invented
it. It was his idea to be like, red alert.
Yeah, I think so. I think he wanted a color-coded
hey, everybody.
Thing. I think he had to like he had to try out lots of different. This is on Enterprise, by the way, yeah. For the uninitiated.
Orange alert.
Aren't you glad that he invented red alert?
Man, some crazy shit.
When Pike was sitting down with Spock, like after first of all, Pike gives that weird motivational speech where he's like, "Don't worry, no one's gonna die."
Yeah, I know. It was like, and he was like, all fucking totally like freaking everybody yeah. out.
It's like going to dinner and saying, "Don't worry, no one's gonna get food poisoning it's here.
Like, no one dies on this. We're coming back." It. And he was all distracted to begin with. And everyone was like, what the fuck is wrong with this?
But then him and Spock go to like the, they had a big old room back then.
That's Pike's room. That's his quarters.
In Enterprise, they had smaller rooms, didn't they?
Well, on Enterprise, but you mean TOS. TOS, yes.
I meant the show Enterprise. They had,
but the show Enterprise is like 100
years
before.
I know, it's way before, but like TOS,
they had tiny like submarine rooms.
I think TOS didn't have, it doesn't matter.
TOS was like a little bit bigger. This is, everything on this ship is oversized. They've done the same thing that Discovery did where everything is bigger than it would have been in TOS.
I mean, if you want to be a jerk about it, you could say, well, the walls aren't purple and light blue either, like in TOS, you know, so it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to be like, well, actually in the TOS, the rooms were smaller and the walls were purple. Yeah. And here the walls
Captain
aren't
Pike
purple.
Is like really kind of cute and sexy. And it's, you want to have a nice spacious room for him to lean on a bar and look morose.
Right. And so he invited Spock.
He's got a brew.
He poured himself some Saurian brandy and he was offered Spock some. Spock turned it down. So he's drinking.
Is it from Dinosaur?
So he's drinking Saurian brand. No, not that.
It's squeezed out of the Saurian aliens.
So this was back in TOS when it was considered like cute to be drinking on the job, I guess, because like that's because
it was the '60s.
That's right. Nowadays, that wouldn't be as thought of as cool. Because back in the '60s,
now you're expected to smoke a blunt.
Well, nowadays,
or snort some cocaine.
You just have a really big lunch.
Yeah, nowadays we
eat a bunch of artisanal cheeses.
I'd say nowadays we recognize sort of alcoholic issues a little bit more readily, where it's more in the public eye. So I thought it was interesting that he's just casually drinking like some Saurian brandy, because they don't do that in any other Star Trek. They guess they have them drink, but Picard
usually off duty or something.
Yeah, like or like when Picard is trying to connect with Scotty, like there was a purpose behind the drinking. He was drinking.
Pike
was drinking.
He saw the future, man. He's gonna drink.
So right, that's what I'm saying. Like he drank, but what was that episode? It was the first episode of TOS where the Doctor was different and he offered Kirk. He was giving him. He prescribed a martini.
Pike a martini.
Yeah, he prescribed. So it's kind of like that. It kind of reminded me of that.
I need some ice for this.
I also think we're meant to understand that this is, it's not that this is out of character for Pike.
No,
but
I didn't say it was.
No. But I think we are meant to understand this is not, he would not normally be doing this, which is part of what's concerning Spock. Mm. Is like Pike is not normally going to be like, all right, I'm just going to go knock back a bunch of shots while on duty, effectively. Yes, he's the captain. He can do what he wants. But I think we're meant to understand that this is not his standard behavior. Maybe he's
his bog standard behavior.
Yes, it's not bog standard Pike-ish behavior.
Because he's imagining himself being burned up and awfulness. Do Vulcans drink?
Sure, why not?
I think they do.
Why would they drink? Isn't that an emotional thing?
I don't know. I can't ever keep track of them. Vulcans are so hypocritical, it's difficult to keep track of their lore.
Yeah, do we want to talk about that whole...
sexy Spock?
We can skip it.
Yeah. I mean...
No, there's important stuff there.
I mean, it was interesting. The dialogue was weird because it was like they were giving cute bickering dialogue, but it was delivered deadpan like a Vulcan. So that brings the question is, emotions aren't just inflections, they're also the words you use. And they were talking as if they were like, you know, a cute, not bickering as in bad, but like, they're being playful. They were being playful, which is a weird,
they've got their emotions, they control them, they're a bit hypocritical about it, they've got the things. But this is, that scene was meant to mirror or reference a mock time when Spock gets his Ponfar with Molly's
time.
With Kirk,
a mock time with his Ponfar.
And he's got to go back and basically he's supposed to go marry T'Pring and also bed her.
Not to Paul.
Not to Paul. And the whole deal with that Vulcan episode is that in the end, T'Pring doesn't want to marry Spock because Spock hasn't been around.
He doesn't want to marry
even
Spock.
Though they have.
He hasn't been around.
She ends up marrying Spork instead.
No, the guy's name is all like Clob or Splog. I forget. I always forget. Something like that. But regardless, that's what she, that's the person she's into because he's actually been on Vulcan. Mm-hmm. And she, there's this sort of bitter thing between Spock and her, and they have a similar exchange with the query and all that other stuff.
I didn't, the whole query thing, I was like, this is reference to something, and yeah, I'm just not that, getting it right now.
They've done that in other places.
I wasn't getting it.
They've done that in
other
places.
And that's my fault.
There's hints of it in Star Trek The Motion Picture and other places, like, right? So that's some formal, Vulcan flirting or bro talk.
I like the idea of wearing an engagement necklace instead of a ring, because rings fuck with my head. I don't like the idea of wearing rings.
They're, but necklaces are all right. That restaurant. I guess that was a Vulcan restaurant.
Yeah, I didn't know what the fuck. Yeah, right. But looked, like a mile in the sky. But one of those mile in the sky Vulcan places.
It looked like the same place where they met when it was Navarre on Discovery.
And exactly,
and,
right.
And so I guess the architecture, you're on top of these mountains because it's a planet with nothing on it.
I know. I was thinking the exact same thing about Discovery and Navarre. How they were like a mile above the ground or something ridiculous in these structures, right?
I mean, it was either floating or it was just a tower or it was on top of a big old edifice of a monolith or some sort of.
Speaking of being in this restaurant, why would they break the rules on the establishment? They were making out in front of people, basically. I know that was supposed to be
Un-Vulcan.
I know it's supposed to be a cute joke.
The rules, the guy,
I know. Look. I know what you're thinking. I'm being
And the Vulcan restaurant, it was just like a pitcher of water or something. What were they eating?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's more Vulcanish, right? I'm not going to judge what is Vulcan. I'm not going to criticize the show. But I just want to bring up the idea that I know that them breaking the rules in public and the guy having to go, please stop going crazy. I know that was supposed to be a joke. It was fun. It was lighthearted. It's like, oh, those Vulcans, they can't handle anything.
I thought it was funny,
but like, But knowingly, Vulcans can't lie, right?
Sure they can.
They're not supposed to be able to lie.
No, that's a lie.
What's a lie? A lie is relative.
They talk about Vulcans can't lie way back in the Menagerie.
And it's presented frequently as being a stereotype that they take advantage of.
This goes back to the ever present debate about Vulcans. Do they have emotions? Do they lie?
Yes, they do.
I know. I'm not arguing about it.
Understand.
I'm just pointing out that given that they're not supposed to lie, they are knowingly breaking a rule, right? By making out in front. They knew the rules. They're knowingly breaking the rules. Well, but they're pretending that what they're doing is okay, and pretending is a form of lying.
Okay.
They're pretending that they're trying to get away with something. They're pretending like, oh, no big deal. They know the rules. If they're doing something that they know is against the rules, they're pretending that it's that they're not breaking the rules, and that's lying.
You are making a very sophisticated.
I'm using Vulcan logic.
You are making a very.
I'm putting my finger up to indicate
like
a very sophisticated point.
He's condescending.
I'm quite the opposite. Quite the opposite.
It's okay. I feel strong in my opinion.
I'm suggesting
you can insult my opinion and I won't be offended.
I'm just suggesting that particular point may be a little more sophisticated than is warranted by the general tenor and tone of this podcast.
How dare you?
The general tenor.
I just wanted to say it. I just had to get it off my chest. Now it's out in the public.
How dare
you? Now it's out in the zeitgeist. You're like, yeah, right, buddy.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, right.
Oh man, I laughed so hard I'm getting dizzy.
Oh, the blood flow to my brain. If you say so, buddy. Okay, fine. Fair enough.
All right, Strange New Worlds. Other wonderful things or any nitpicks or tidbits? I found a few of the directorial flourishes, not bad by any means, not bad, and not like season two Discovery where you almost want to vomit. There were a few camera motions,
like going down the warp.
No, that I liked. It was just there was one like when Pike comes in and meets Mbenge and they hug. I largely liked it, but I was like, is there something a little off about it in terms of just the, because the camera is just like comes in and follows Pike and then swings all the way around them. to me, it took away a little bit from the intimacy than a more locked down camera would have. The other thing that aggravated me mildly was in the opening sequence, I felt that they did not let the names of the actors, producers, etc., linger long enough.
That's an interesting observation.
You know, like Anson Mount comes up and almost immediately fades off. And then the next one, and I don't think it was a function of not having enough room or time, because you can also do the fade in and overlap and then have the other one fade in and then the first one fade out.
Distinct production decision.
Yes. It just, to me, I was getting a little like, come on. Hey, we want to look at the names.
It's like, yeah. I can't read it that fast. Just let me read the names.
Yeah. Let me just look at one or two of those names. See what's up. I don't want to have to IMDb or Memory Alpha.
He just wanted to see some of those names.
Just want to see some of those names. Money.
That was a deep cut. Ramon's documentary. Have they used that joke when Pike says, "I'm all ears" to Spock? Have they used that joke in Star Trek before?
I think so.
Do you remember when Ross Perot said that joke?
I'm all ears.
Yeah.
I'm Ross Perot.
Yeah. I wonder if Star. Yeah.
What a useful. It's not a bad impression of him, but it's somewhat useless these days.
Yeah, Ross Perot.
Back in the 90s, that would have killed.
Who's more relevant?
I'll tell you what.
Him or Dukakis?
Who's more relevant?
Or more
Dukakis
more,
is alive.
More relevant to make fun of, more relevant to reference and passing.
Dukakis was probably more, Perot. Much more qualified.
Yeah. Yeah, Dukakis was highly qualified. Yeah,
he was highly qualified.
Really good governor.
I just meant in pop culture.
Massachusetts.
So they've never used the I'm all ears joke before. They had to have used it somewhere.
I'm sure they have. Yes. I'm sure
they have. What were the transporters doing with that booster? Did it transport the booster directly into the eyeball?
Into his blood.
Was tight.
I think the idea was they beamed the serum directly into Spock's blood.
That's pretty hardcore.
Lieutenant or Chief Kyle. Actually, I don't think he's a chief at this stage.
They called him chief.
Did they call him chief?
Maybe they were just like, hey, chief.
I heard him say chief. Yeah, they were just being condescending. Because he was like, that's not what transporters do. It's like, okay, chief, you figure it. Why don't you make that chief? Because
we will assume that he is a chief. He's already Chief Kyle at this stage. Mm-hmm. Another character from TOS. He beamed the vial back in. And I found all of this heist business great. I thought the whole going in, even though some of it, of course, was somewhat predictable in terms of there will be an obstacle and then they have to overcome the obstacle and then there will be another obstacle. That's true of every story, right? Mm-hmm. But the way it's portrayed, the way it's put together, to me, this was fun. And throughout all of it, particularly because this is the series premiere, we are learning about these characters along the way, particularly Laan Noonien Singh, where we learn a lot about her personality before the exposition dump at the end, where she explains everything about her family and her relationship, her prior relationship to number one.
The Gorn.
Yeah. Which one of those two leaders do you think was the conservative and which was the liberal?
I think the conservative was that lady with the crazy hair.
See, I think it was the dude in the robe because he was wearing a robe.
You think so? You think it was the robe?
I sometimes wear a robe. Well, would you accuse me of being conservative?
She had some kind of Thatcher vibe.
She did.
She did have a Thatcher vibe.
But he wore a robe into politics.
Well, if I were the writers, I'm going to assume they did this on purpose because this is what I would have attempted to do when trying to tell this story. Because if your goal is to tell the story in and deliver the moral of the tale in some sort of relatively neutral fashion, you would want to code both characters as both.
That's right. Yeah.
And so,
but they did make a direct. A comparison to Earth in the 21st century.
Yes, they did, but these are aliens, and part of the brilliance of Star Trek is that you can transpose stuff onto aliens that still makes a metaphor work without, like, part of it is just tricking people into thinking that, I agree with that. And then they noodle it around a little bit, and they're like, oh, yeah, I should, you know.
Right.
Do X, Y, and Z to
That's
be a
true.
Better person.
That's true.
The idea anyway.
That's
so
true.
I think they coded both the leaders because yes, she had a very Thatcher vibe in some ways. In other ways, she wasn't coming off exactly like that. It was more like an appearance. Mm. And the guy, as you pointed out, Dan, Some aspects of the guy seemed a little bit more like he's part of the insurrect, the liberal faction could be one argument. On the other hand, he is wearing a robe.
Yeah. So yeah, so, that's, I thought that was pretty much self-explanatory.
What if he was wearing a cape? Could he be progressive with a cape?
What if he was wearing a robe and slippers? Would that code him as liberal?
That sounds more like
If he had slippers. Yeah, that was
if he had like bunny slippers.
Yes, that would change the whole
slippers. Like little colorful bunny slippers.
That's the Green Party.
I like
that. If he had like a had the New York Times crossword puzzle folded underneath his tucked under his arm at all times as an affectation. If you look closely, he clearly hasn't filled out any of the puzzle and it's from 6 months ago.
I like that they I like those the space station with the shot of the domes.
Yes.
I thought it reminded me of like old TOS matte paintings backgrounds. And so I thought that was really cool. I like that they referenced the domes too. It wasn't just like, look at these cool domes. It, like they talked about them. I thought that was fun and I thought it looked cool.
That was nice.
I mean, yeah, whether or not if you think it maybe didn't look real or not, it didn't matter. It just reminded
I thought it looked great.
I thought it looked fantastic. And like I said, it reminded me of TOS like Matt.
The other thing that helps, I think, remind you of TOS is that the though it's clearly hyper rendered, you know, super awesomely rendered, the basic shape evokes those old TOS style stations, even though those were very simplistic structures. They were shaped similarly, and we've seen, I think, some references on Discovery and a couple other places about sort of a similar design for this time period. Another station that evokes the shape is like regular one in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. That has some similar vibes, although again much more simplistic.
I decided that, so his catchphrase, Pike's catchphrase, is to say, hit it. I think mine would be, let's go fast. I think that would be mine.
How would you say it?
I would say like, let's go fast. They'd be like, okay, number one, put everyone in line.
And then shoot them all in the back of the fucking head.
And then I go, all right, let's go fast.
I think I would just say like, come on.
Come on.
Like, why aren't you going already?
Why aren't you? What's taking so long?
Already know, you know what we have to do.
I enjoyed how Pike,
fucking Starfleet.
You know, Pike's hit it has been. We've heard that since the second season of Discovery.
It's true.
The first time he says it in this episode, he says it all like morosely, and he's just sort of like, hit it. And because he's all depressed and not wanting to be there and worried about his performance, and he's nervous about actually going to where he's going and doing his job. Oh, and I think one thing that is worth pointing out thematically, and we've discussed this on previous episodes of the podcast, that in the modern serialized season-long serialized arc
season type, long serial
season long arc episodes of like Discovery and Picard, some of these things that people are dealing with, they're interesting, but they do get stretched out over time. It can be a little bit hard to keep track of everything, etc. And what I enjoyed about this episode in particular in comparison is not only was the story itself very self-contained for a one-hour pilot, it wasn't even a two-part pilot. I mean, Discovery had basically a three-fucking-part pilot, right? It was a self-contained story introducing most of the characters that we're going to meet, and had a beginning, middle, of an end. And Pike's little arc about being nervous and hesitant to go back on duty is resolved by the end of the episode. It's not a season-long thing. Now, no doubt, throughout the seasons and throughout the series, this issue of his impending doom somewhere down the line will come up here and there. But they've resolved the immediate problem was, I'm nervous to go out. And by the end of the episode, he's like, nah, fuck it. I love it here. I'm super excited to go out, and I'm going to have a good time, even if I'm dragging along some shadows with me, which was another evocative thing that Pike said, that whole little thing about, like, even if we bring our shadows with us, they could just remind us about how awesome it is when there's colorful lights.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Odds and ends? Any concluding thoughts?
That movie, living with his shit.
The movie, living with his shit. The movie they were watching at the beginning was The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, okay. Very famous. Right,
Michael Rennie as Klaatu.
Sci-fi classic.
Klaatu.
Verato, Nictum, Nicto.
Why don't they call the United Federation of Planets UFP or UFOP? UFOP? Wouldn't they?
They do call it the UFP.
They never say UFOP.
I think generally, no, they don't say UFOP.
Because people
probably for the obvious reasons.
Okay, fair enough.
UFOP. Odds and ends. Music was good. I liked that they had a couple, like with the Spock moments, they had a couple of TOS stings that were all like, doo, 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 doo. Like when it was like, oh, there's some comical stuff going to happen.
Yeah, that was good. Permission to act fast.
Spock can scream, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Spock was in pain from the ears. That does look
Yeah,
like
that was
hurts.
Funny. Yeah. His ears were like going back and forth, and he was like, yeah, the pain is.
I like that in the elevator, they didn't even try to have some like alien music. They were just playing some like human jazz, like some human elevator jazz music. And that one alien woman was looking at Anson Mount the same way that B.B. Newirth looks at Jonathan Frakes in that episode of TNG.
Yeah, it was a similar vibe. I did get that
first contact,
vibe.
Maybe. Yeah. That's the episode first contact. Odds and ends.
Because those are kind of forehead people too, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I was just saying when what's her name? Noonien Singh, she was going, permission to act fast. Did you notice that? She said, permission to act fast.
It's I kind of remember that. Is that when they were in disguise on the planet and then she does the thing where she acts like...
Because they're always saying permission to speak freely. That's the thing that everyone always says everywhere in the universe is permission to speak freely.
I really like this character. Somebody
said, permission to act fast. I thought that was a funny kind of...
Somebody...
It's like permission to eat a salad.
A few people at least have mentioned this on the internet. Although I had the same thought when I first saw the preview, is that she reminds me of a sort of a I didn't come up with the term junior drummer from The Expanse.
I was thinking, you know what? I was kind of thinking that a little
in terms
too.
Of attitude, right? It's very different characters in a lot of ways, but there's
she's got a feisty attitude.
There's a vibe where it is tough. It's like tough and strong, but also there's something going on that she's got to resolve, and there's some pain in the past that we would be interested in finding out more about. Really liked all her interactions with Pike and the other characters, and so I'm excited about that.
Oh, I won't go too deep into this, but I just wanted to mention before we forget, there were two more situations where they said that's an order in this episode.
All right,
there were two last episode in Picard.
In Picard, yeah.
But for two, this one for a total of four this week.
There's a lot of high-ranking officers mouthing off.
Yeah, well, when Admiral.
So you're referring to Admiral April,
Admiral Bob, when he said, Admiral April.
Are we going to have this conversation again?
Okay, that's
his name is Robert April. That's his name.
Yeah, okay.
He's an admiral now. He used to be the captain of the Enterprise.
Okay. sometime between admiral, that, he was a commodore.
I'm sorry, it's because like normally there's a whole like, you know, there's a bit of theater of the mind stuff going on here, but what do you say?
Admiral
when
Bob.
When you just said Admiral April, he looked sincerely flummoxed. You're like, what? I don't get it. All right, anyway,
fair enough. Yeah, so
Admiral Bob.
He told him to say, I need you to get back on that horse, Captain. He goes, that's an order. And then, which is fine, I guess. And then Spock goes, we can't further influence the destiny of the world. Mentu or not, Spock, we already have. Una goes, Chris, General Order 1 clearly states that we cannot. And Pike goes, screw General Order 1, Spock, you're with me. The rest of you get back to the ship. And then Noonien Singh goes, Captain? And he goes, right now, that's an order. This was when they were on the prison.
Was appropriate, though. Yeah. Right? So far, these both have been appropriate examples.
But it's just been four in a week.
It is a lot.
Four it in the same day.
All right. Last thing we mentioned before closing down the show. Last thing, because we cannot go without mentioning
Marina Sirtis.
I think we can do
that. Was there some reason to mention Marina
Sirtis?
No,
I was just because you talked about Riker and I was thinking about
talk about word
pizza.
Association.
Yeah, I know that's not a good thing. It's not a sign of
you think of Marina Sirtis and pizza. the perfect combination.
I mean, I know it's not a sign of creativity to just make random associations and blurt them out without any filters.
Be if the end result is funny. But no, what I was referring to was this brilliant audience jerk around that they did.
Whoa.
Where they keep mentioning, like they mentioned a few times through the episode, they're all like, oh, you know, at the beginning of the episode, they're like, oh, we got to go, but Lieutenant Kirk couldn't make it in time, so he'll have to join us later.
Yeah,
and right. then at the end of the episode, all they're right. all like, oh, Lieutenant Kirk's here, Kirk. As you personally requested, and he's coming up to Sam the bridge, Kirk. And everyone's like, oh, well, wait a second, I thought Kirk wasn't going to show up until later. What's going on?
This guy's got a mustache. Shit.
And the door opens, and it's a goofy-ass motherfucker with a 70s stash,
yeah.
like a little pencil drawn on mustache.
Like he was in an adult movie.
And this is brilliant in so many ways. First of all, because while a lot of us may have been following casting and stuff, we're not expecting that this would be the Kirk right. or whatever exactly. You know, we were like, what's going on here?
He's supposed to happen next season.
Yeah. George Samuel Kirk is canonically from TOS. He is Jim Kirk's brother, and he has a family, and he dies in TOS. spoiler warning.
He's in sciences.
But that happened 60 years ago. Yes, he's a scientist, and in playing that little switcheroo, that was fun. That was playful with the audience. And I think the ultimate in playfulness is not just that this is not James T. Kirk. This is his mm-hmm. scientist brother.
Sam,
but then they
Sam.
Kept
bullshit
they,
scientist.
My name
kept,
is Sam
they
Kirk.
Kept the dumb mustache,
yeah.
which is in the original TOS.
That's funny.
In the we only see his brother, if I recall correctly, we only see him as a dead body, and the dead body is just William Shatner lying on the ground with like his hair like dyed a different color and this fucking goofy ass taped on mustache. And so it looks hilarious. It's either watch the episode. It's the episode where they have the like flying egg omelets or flying around and like jumping
yes.
on people's faces.
Egg omelets.
But
did they get the same actor to play?
Is it A Taste of Armageddon? Is that what it is?
James T. Kirk, and then they got like in the new show, and then like the. It's the same guy.
No,
he just
it's
has,
a totally
he just has a taped on.
No, mustache. That would have been great. This is a different guy. he looks Kirk-ish. He looks like he could be a Kirk brother, including of the actor that they have hired to play Kirk. So yeah. Anyway, it's great. I just thought, all right, kudos to the producers. It'll be fun if they keep doing fun stuff where reasonable along those lines. I'm looking forward to it. So, any other final thoughts before we shut everything down permanently? For the remainder of the week until we can open it up again next week and discuss episode 2 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Which has a name?
It does have a name, but I forget.
Oh, man, you forgot.
Yeah, I forgot.
You're always mad that there's no name, and now that there is one, you forgot.
Oh, man.
I'm only mad when they don't provide it. I'm not mad at myself if I don't have it. That's on me.
It's a one-way street.
Yeah.
But this guy's mad at you.
Yeah, you can be mad at me.
Pizza's going to send out for you.
All right.
I thought it was a neat episode, and I liked it.
Pizza's going to send out for you.
Agree. I really, really enjoyed the episode. I'm very much looking forward to next week. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how this episodic Star Trek in the new
world. How did you say
world
it? It's going to be fun.
Out.
It's going to be a fun show.
It's going to be a fun time. It's going to be a fun show.
Classic Star Trek. Did you when I was watching it, there's like a pre-opening thing where they like some spaceships zip around and they zip around like an old school like Starfleet badge.
Oh yeah.
And it's all like this is classic Star Trek. So
yeah. That was a new thing on
that's
Paramount
cool,
Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we will discuss all of that and more next week. Hope you enjoyed it this week. If not, you can send your complaints to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
I hope you hated it. I do this to fucking make you hate it.
You can find us on social media at It's Got Star Trek.
Here's
as
a
in
waste
the
your
at
time.
Symbol. It's Got Star Trek on Twitter, Instagram, you know, Facebook, YouTube.
Some people are calling it Twitire now.
And you can go to
the gram.
To the website, www.itsgotstartrek.com, where you can find easy links to subscribe on all the most famous podcast services like Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and Amazon and Spotify and Stitcher.
You're easy.
Boom, ba 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 boo. And I think that's all the end of podcast content.
I think we've squeezed it out.
It's necessary, yeah. All right, so we will talk to you again roughly this time next week. So until then, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Spock, are you naked?
No, Captain.
No, Chris, he's not. He was about to be. It's a special night.
Sorry.